Support this podcast at patreon.com/rednews.
So, hello everyone, it's Red News Podcast 257, and you've gratefully not heard my voice for about a month, which I think I needed a cleansing slate from United. Good news, we're going to be trying full of positives after that shit show yesterday, is all the teams below us apart from Wolves had a bad day. So results in the relegation battle went United's way. I don't know, my mojo is so shot after like Newcastle, as you've probably heard, that I don't know how long it'll last, put up a massive under the dome stripes type shield and deflector zone. And it's actually helped, because I don't want United to get to me with all the real life stuff we have all going on. So it's not perfect, but it's basically, I've lowered my expectations, and it's pretty sad to admit this, to zero. I expect absolutely nothing off them every game. And when you cleanse yourself like that in some Buddhist enterprise, the last 15 minutes become a bonus yesterday that I didn't see that bit coming, so I'll rather focus on that. And ultimately, yeah, it's pretty pathetic. But if you expect nothing, and anything will be a bonus in the cups, sort of you think, well, at least we had 15 minutes where we showed attack, 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 and a United style, and was actually pretty impressed that I didn't know they had that in them to go gung-ho. Unfortunately, the fault lines were we still could have conceded. I did think, thank God they didn't show the slow motion of Young pulling his shirt, because then I think he would have given it. So VAR is just bonkers that they show an outside version. If it had been against us, and I know like every, you'll have two penalties a game every time, but I think, and also I've changed my feeling, you know, like we keep going, oh, how are United doing this to us? How are United losing twice to Bournemouth? How are United losing at home to Palace? How, you look at that table and it's embarrassing. So ultimately, I thought the other week, well, if we are this utter batshit crazy football club at the moment, then these things do happen. So that is exactly, if you follow it through to its logical conclusion, that United are this completely bonkers enterprise top to bottom, on field and off field, then you are going to have Bournemouth, and the exceptions are going to be the minimal highs that we're having at the moment, because if it's all shit, Ineos are going to go low, not high. The Glazers are going to be keeping this cancerous cell over the whole club. United are going to bring in a manager and it's all going to go to shit, even more shit than the shit before we had the shit. So it's like, when until we get all of these strands sorted and it's not any one thing, then you can start planning ahead. But I don't think we can have talk about Amorim really, because yes, he's made faults. Yes, the system does need a plan B. Yes, he's saying he adapts more, but he needs to adapt even more. But until things fix themselves on multi-macro and micro levels, you're going to have batshit. And my final thought before I go to Nick, who was there yesterday, is that he said, Amorim, that he could hear a certain noise from the players in training on last week, that he was quite impressed. And he said, it's a noise that you know things are beginning to take shape on them, learning about his tactics. And I thought, if you'd have heard me yesterday watch that game, the fucking noises that were emanating out of my mouth. Because we're all this, confidence is low in players. You know, like Maguire, we said had an okay spell. And then you watch their goal yesterday, where he's just heading it blindly like some whack-a-mole that you think. And you go back to the two positions that are most crucial in any club, but especially United, that we've struggled sometimes in eras, are your goalie and your striker. And if you haven't got both working, and Unana was the least of our problems, has now become, we all knew he wasn't good enough ultimately. He's become a massive, massive issue. And why the fuck? I can't remember if it was Van der Sar or Schmeichel did a expertise video or interview years ago saying, you parry it out for a fucking corner, basically, because then you trust your defenders to clear that corner. You do not push it back into play. And it's a real fault. Anyway, Nick, you are looking very Amorim. I'm going to use this photo that Shane's just taken. You've got the training gear. You look cool. How are you and how did you find yesterday?
Yeah, all right, thank you for that one. I thought you might shout at me to buy official merchandise, which I'm not a big fan of, but...
You guys are right.
I know, but I saw this jacket come out and I thought, I have to buy that, because it's just nice and plain and simple. So, I really enjoyed yesterday, to be honest with you. I thought it was a great day. You know, we obviously, we were chatting in the pub before, just saying that none of us were confident, none of us thought we were going to win. I mean, I had 1-0 Everton, it just had that written all over it to me. So, you know, it's just quite a nice day. I really like Goodison Park. I've been before. I think it's only my second time there. I think I was trying to make a break for it. But, you know, it's a great ground. It's good. On the one hand, I'm sorry to see it go, but at the same time, it is a shithole, isn't it, really, at the same time. But it was yesterday was just really summed up United for me, really, in terms of this system and where we're at the moment. You know, you said before then, Barney, about Plan B. And, you know, Amorim came out and said the opposite yesterday and said, well, I don't think it's the case that we need a plan B for the system. We just need to do plan A better. And that's what it was in the second half. I don't think there is a plan B with these players because it's so limited in what they can do. You know, that system for me, I don't like it. I've been very vocal on it before. I don't think this team can play that way. I think it's obvious. I don't think it suits Maguire. I don't think it suits De Ligt. They're both not quick enough. I thought they were really poor at the back for the goals. I thought Bruno was one of the worst Brunos I ever saw yesterday. He just, the ball goes past him as much as it does for Casemiro. And I'm at the stage, and me and old Paul were talking about it at half time. And I know this is going to divide opinion massively, but I'm ready to come on with him now. I think we need a fresh start for him. As much as he gives us some moments and the free kick's wonderful, I don't think the bad outweighs the good anymore. Certainly not in this system, because he's useless out of possession. He doesn't win any tackles. The ball goes around him. And he's one of the higher players up the pitch. Same with Højlund and Xerxes, he's just as guilty. And I know there's others too. I'm not trying to single Bruno out, but people talk about being our best player. You should be able to be much better than what you are. And, you know, the pressing starts from the front and there isn't any of it. And then suddenly it's one ball and it's into the back and Maguire and De Ligt aren't quick enough to deal with it. And you could just see that Everton were all over. I mean, Ugarte spent most of that game at right mid for the entirety of the game. So, players are too wide, there's nothing narrow, there's just no shape back, and they just don't look like they're doing so. How we managed to cobble a comeback in that match, I genuinely have no idea. It was quite miraculous, really, that we got away from the draw, but, and even maybe could have won it in the last couple of minutes really by going forward. But I mean, I'll take a draw, let's be honest. I mean, this talk of going down is really irritating. I have to say this, because if I Everton fans think going down, I'll be amazed if those three teams in the relegation zone match the points total that we're on now. They are really bad. And thank Christ they're really, really bad. And that's the only reason why we're not going down. We could not pick up another point between now and the end of the year, and I don't think we'd be going down. But obviously, I don't think it's going to be the case. So, I enjoyed yesterday. I'll save my hate of the weeks from yesterday for later on when we do hate of the week.
But you said, you made the point, Nick, that being there does, and I've made this point before, because like I wasn't there yesterday, so I become a bit more moany, you know, like, whereas at the ground you're suddenly turning it to chance and come on urging them forward. First half especially, I become much more angsty and you know. So you made the point to me and when we were messaging.
Yeah, I agree. The thing is though, when you're at home, I know this sounds really, really bad, but I think just maybe it's because of the years of going there and thinking, you know, you kind of expect your routine 2-0 wins. And I know we don't get those as much as we used to anymore, if at all, anymore. But I still think this whole thing of going to Old Trafford, where, as you said before, it's kind of like everything's so hostile when you go there in terms of the mood and the atmosphere. And, you know, you get a lot of good Reds that go away from home and they're all penned in together, that make the effort. And you just feel that sort of gets you a little bit more. I mean, we said the same in Bucharest as well, didn't we, the other week? And, you know, it is better. It is less moaning. I mean, apart from obviously me and Paul's fighting around half time about that, too, about Bruno Fernandes yesterday. But other than that, though, when the actual game is going on, you genuinely give a shit a lot more about it. And I was really arsed, and I really did celebrate that goal. And it's mad because that second goal means we get a point Everton, and it affects nothing in the league. It's not like we're going to win the title or even going to qualify for Europe. We're going to finish in the bottom half, and I think a lot of us have made our peace with that. But when you're there, you just care a little bit. I mean, I think most of it was because the Everton fans seemed going down for 60 minutes. And I think it really got to them, I think, in the end. But, and I said to Welsh Lee, I said, you know, as soon as the penalty was overturned, I was like, let's go and win it now, really pissed off, because they were really pissed off. Looking at the replay on the screen, just like, I mean, but yeah, it was good, yeah.
But the thing is, before I go to Shane, you say they're really bad, and they are, and I do agree that the bottom three are going to go down with probably about 34 points. Ipswich, well, you know, are going to give us one fucking hell of a game, and that has got either a Bruno 89-minute penalty to equalise or just scab a win all over it. But who, you know, I agree with you sometimes. I thought Bruno, when he's deeper, this is where, you know, there's an argument, do you build the side around Bruno and a system around Bruno? When he went deeper, when he then the whole game, and who drove us forward and who's responsible for that last 15 minutes was Bruno. Who's the one who every single time gets us out of the hole? So at the games, I've gone in to, you know, the frustrations. He should be against the likes of Ipswich, running the show like Odegaard sometimes does for Arsenal. Should be running that whole show. But then when I wasn't watching it yesterday, I just think, there's the man again. You know, like, oh, it's Bruno. Yet again, it's Bruno. Yet again, the last 15 minutes are down to Bruno. So for when we knock him, I also think you have to give him the credit that finale was down to Bruno Fernandes, because he had more time. He had more time on the ball, and he's not asked to do a role that, as you said, he's not good at.
Yeah, well, he's asked to do too much, and I've said that to you before. And, you know, the thing is for me is I don't think you can build a side around him. He's 31 this year. There's no future there. If you're planning with Amorim, who's 38, 39, or whatever all he is, you can't sit there and plan a squad, you know, team, which next year, you know, come August time, he's going to be 31. You can't plan a team around someone who, you know, because
no, you forget that at his age, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that. And for me, this system requires you to be good with and without the ball. As a lot of systems do, but this one particularly, when you play three at the back and your fullbacks are going to get that far up, and two of your centre backs and Maguire and De Ligt, who I think are okay, don't get me wrong, but they're not quick enough to play this line. And you could see it time and time again yesterday. And Bruno looked better because they got distracted when Garnacho came on. You know, we look better when he comes on, and he takes two players away. So that's why I think that. And look, yeah, I know he pops up with that. And the stat yesterday that I saw when I watched the game back on Match of the Day last night was our first direct free kick in the Premier League since Ronaldo against Norwich.
Jesus.
Does anyone remember that goal? I don't remember that. I was like 2.5 years ago.
That's
who's been thinking? So is he that good? I don't know.
No, but they That's the thing, Nick. In a batshit crazy club, we didn't score for 100 corners. These all over a decade. It would be if we scored two free kicks in a row. That would be the exception. So, Shane, I'm almost at the immune stage. Immune to it all. Where are you?
Yeah, I'm pretty immune to it. And my expectations, like the same as you said at the start, my expectations are pretty low. And I'm pretty accepting now that in the league at least, I see it's nothingness, because I agree with Nick, and I've agreed that for a few weeks, that we're nowhere near a relegation battle, because that bottom three or four are so far adrift, and I've got little hope of recovering, even if, you know, as Nick said, we stayed on the same point. So I don't think we're in a relegation battle or even close to it. I think in some ways that might make it a bit more interesting, but so I've resigned myself that in the league it's just nothingness now, and all I'm really looking for, it's not really the results even. I'm looking for some shoots or some signs that there's a bit of progress, that the players are at least working for the manager, putting the effort in, and they're starting to see what he's asking of them. Because at the moment, being harsh, I don't see any evidence of that. I see it as a bit of a mess, if I'm honest with you, on the pitch. And I think, you know, but Spurs, which I was at last week, you know, had a bit of a debate with my lad, and, you know, the football means more to him than it does. Not saying it doesn't mean much to me, but, you know, he was making the point to me that the sort of balance of the social occasion of being there versus the actual football itself is more weighted to the social side on my part. To him, the football, he's young and keen, and the football kind of matters. And he was getting really agitated last week, and he was saying to me in another sort of old head that, you know, I think it's not being against Amorim, and I kind of agree with this, but you need to see something in the meantime. You know, it's a long haul, and we don't want to see managers changing, but you want to see some progress and some signs of that, as I said. And I thought Spurs in particular, and the first half yesterday, they look pretty clueless. That's what alarms me. It looks like they don't know what they're supposed to be doing, and that is a bit of an alarm. But yeah, to Nick's point, well, and your point as well on Bruno, I thought yesterday at the start, like tactically, it looked all wrong. I could kind of see what Everton were trying to do, but we had huge gaps in midfield. like it was just ridiculous, and that just invites pressure on as Nick rightly said, quite a slow defence. So I think we sort of undone ourselves a bit in that first half. That midfield formation was really confusing to me, and I couldn't see the logic at all. And then, but when, as you said, Barney, Bruno went deeper, he started to play well, the gaps were plugged, and I thought, you know, we looked a much better organised side, and you could see, you know, it just changed the game, because Everton are a poor side, like it didn't take much to put them under pressure. So I don't want to criticise the manager, because he does need time. I'm not one of these that, you know, wants a knee-jerk. Managers need, you know, at least a year, if not two, in my opinion. So it's unfair to criticise the manager, but it doesn't mean he's immune to some questioning along the way. And I do think, tactically, he's getting it wrong quite a lot at the moment. He needs to learn quickly on that, because he's not going to make the long-term progress if he doesn't get something in the near term. Because, you know, I've said this before, like a broken record. I think I sent it to Nick in Bucharest, or maybe it was after Spurs and someone. But, like, I'm a bit pessimistic that I don't think we're going to get this rip-up of the squad and the overhaul that's needed. That will take time, and he's therefore got to get something out of these players, and he's going to have the sort of probably the core of this squad next season as well, with maybe 2, 3, possibly 4 changes. So he's got to get a tune out of them. So it's no good saying, well, the players are not his and they're not suited to it. Unfortunately, the reality is you've got to get something out of these players. And I think, as you both said, this sort of rigid sticking to sort of plan A, it's fine. We need that philosophy. You know, we need something different as Amorim typically come in. If we, you know, follow the same old path, we'd be back where we started in a year. But equally, you need to sort of game by game adjust, and the best managers do that. And I think he's been a bit slow to do that. Yet yesterday was positive that, you know, Spurs, he didn't roll the dice. Yesterday he did, and it made all the difference. So, yeah, I'm a bit confused by United at the moment. It's hard to fathom where it go. I think patience, obviously, with the manager, but I think it is a concern that I can't see any progress at all at the moment. I can't see the players buying into anything at the moment. They look as confused, and the energy, whether that's down to confidence, they're just shit, or they don't buy into what he's asking to them. It's probably a combination of all three, but we need to see something. If Amorim's hearing the noises in training, I don't know what noises he's hearing.
We'll get on to the off field in a minute, but it's, you know, like, because the whole club, you know, like, is this seething, you know, anything could happen. Like, I wake up now thinking on a Monday, literally anything could happen at this football club this week. Someone made the point, and made, like, every good manager can adapt. And with Amorim, you know, I thought yesterday he looked, oh, you suave bastard. Whatever little murmurings of doubt, I looked at him on that touchline and I thought, I can see in 2 years this man, and we're all fucking trying to imitate him with his tight jeans, and you suave. Look, Nick's even wearing the gear today. But it's like the three at the back, you know, like the Palace did me, you know, maybe, yeah, he plays it Wednesday against Ipswich, but you think every good manager adapts. You don't have to play it Fulham in the cup, you know, like, and that's, and the bit that, the finances are so grim, you know, and we get on this in the next few pods, that we are stuck with these players. And there was one bit that concerned me is, you know, the pressure, and it is, you know, he could have all the life he had when things were good at Sporting, this club, eating players, managers, etc., that he said last week in an interview with Sky, along the lines of, you know, if I know it isn't working and they come to tell me, you know, you've got to change and I know I won't and this isn't working out, then I can go. And then I suddenly had this doom ridden, God, I can see this all unravelling again. And, you know, like, so we've got to go all in, but equally I'd like him to just show a little bit more adaptation. And during games, didn't need to be the 62nd minute yesterday to make that change for Garnacho. That's a half-time change there. And it did change it into the thing. You know, like, so I just, nothing to lose, anything could happen. The one thing, you know, the other thing is, people saying, oh, the league, you know, not to the Ineos or Glazers. That every place is 4 million a year. So they're not going to, you know, he's not going to suddenly, I'm trying loads of different things in games. For 4 million a year, every place, you go up three places, that's 12 million into coffers. Sadly, we know why, the Glazers. Now on to Ineos. Look, They put money in. They're the only people who've put money in. It's a shit show, not of their making, but I maintain they've gone low, not high. I do have certain concerns. You know, the data approach loses a bit of the emotion. Yes, it's worked at Brentford and Brighton, but, you know, you wouldn't get a Paul Scholes or Norman Whiteside coming through with that mentality who developed later, and data is king, especially Brailsford, who massively concerns me. It's, and also, you know, the staff treatment, this air of that we laughed at Ratcliffe saying in the UWS interview, you know, if we win against Bodo, everyone's happy. That this treatment, you know, constantly shoving shit our way and the staff way. Three messaged me after the latest, you know, last week, going, the mood is shite. If you stop telling us the old ways were shite, you were shite, everything's shite, you've got to have a bit of, you know, you've got to tell people, you've got to lift the mood, and there's no lift in a mood. And the attitude, one was, it's utter dark here. That's the staff saying it's utter dark. So, if you're geniuses, Ineos, if you've got all this, you know, not football experience, business experience, you've got to churn, your PR's atrocious, you're targeting low, not high, and you've got to change the mood. Ultimately, I do think they're going to be buying this club outright. So far, it's been a poor year. Toe in the Water makes an excellent... His column in the next mag is very, very persuasive. But it's a poor start. You're going all in a cycling clip, man. You know, the Lord Co. You want everyone else to change. You've got to adapt as well, Nick.
I think with the, as you say, I mean, they put money in, which is something. I mean, the other thing, because just to the point that you were making before, really, with Aaron saying about you could see it unravelling, I mean, with Ineos as well, I mean, they sacked Ashworth early because that wasn't working, so it wouldn't surprise me if they did something as drastic like that on the pitch. That's kind of really where we're at, but I don't really know what else to add to that, really, if I'm being honest with you, with the ownership. I mean, just... don't put my season ticket price up, it's not my fault. This is why I was putting on, we went down, but at least you can't put my season ticket up. But we're not going to go down.
So. Oh, we, again, in this matrix, we'd be the only club who goes down and we'd put the prices up. But not that we are.
Well, that's because he had gone from 19 home games to 23 home games, wouldn't it?
But this is a shout into the ether of two things. I thought, you know, like the Glazers, the debt, that's dragging us down. You know, we're two decades old into this, but that debt dragging this football club, making still all this money down. And the other thing is, I just had a fond, you know, there's halcyon days, and Brailsford will tell me off for this, but you remember, like, well, we had 15, 20 years of it, but you'd be in March and you'd be in every competition, and not just in every competition, you'd fancy your chances. Treble would never always come off, but you'd be in, you know, like March and April, and there'd be nights to come, and you'd be counting down, you're playing AC Milan, you're playing Real Madrid, you're playing Barcelona, you're top of the league, and you know, oh, can Fergie rest him on Saturday because we're just at the top before a Wednesday? And I thought, and now we're playing Ipswich hoping we can scab a win. Just like, Shane?
Well, it's the thing that, and it's only time will tell, so I guess this is more of a question than a sort of observation, but like, I assume with this, you know, there's another question whether they're capable or not, and I've got my doubts about that, but they put this kind of like football structure in place, saying that we seem to have more directors of whatnot than anyone, like, I don't, than players, but you kind of got to assume that, I assumed, what I heard from them was that they put this sort of sporting football structure in place, which then sets the kind of like the strategy and the playing style top to bottom through the youth up to the first team, you know, and obviously that takes time. So I'm assuming you then recruit a manager that fits that style, that type of football you've got. So I'm assuming they've, you know, these are a lot of assumptions here, you assume they've looked at Amrin and think, well, he's got the style of football that we want. So you'd like to think that they're building something that's immune to, if the manager proves incapable of like motivating the players or coaching them, you know, they've still got that sort of continuity of style. But my fear is it's in reverse. They just thought, who can we turn to?
Yeah.
We've got a bright young manager. Like, I'm not against them at all, like in this argument after Tottenham with someone that I fully back him. But he is a gamble. Like, he's a young manager who's, you know, he's had a bit of success in Portugal. But, you know, he's, you know, United and the Premier League is a whole different level. So that's what I'm confused about. Are they recruiting for this style and Amrin's just part of that? jigsaw, or are they now going to go and buy players that he's telling them to? Because if it's the latter and he doesn't work out, then we're back to square one potentially if it goes wrong. So that's the first thing. The thing with Brailsford, and like, if it's true these noises about, you know, he's fed up with here in the past and we need to draw the slate clean, I agree to an extent. You know, times have changed and you can't keep harking back. You've got no right to glory because of what you've done in the past. But equally, you know, I know things are different to when he came along, but Ferguson was a man who kind of grew with that kind of pressure of the history. He actually drew on it. He fucking had Matt Busby in the dressing room. He was inspired by it. And, like, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you're daunted or you think that needs ripping up, Brailsford, you're probably at the wrong place, because what makes Man United different in our eyes and in everyone's eyes is that it is that history that makes us different. It's what makes the club, you know. You've got, like, we shouldered the kind of tragedy of Munich. We shouldered the sort of, you know, we drew on, like Ferguson did, as I said, drew on those past glories of first club to win a European final, etc., etc. Busby Babes, all those things have been drawn on by Ferguson as the most recent and successful manager. So I think it's a bit disingenuous to sort of say, you know, let's rip it all up. I think if it's true, he's talking shite there, but. Yeah, I think it's, you know, we're in the hands of Ineos. I think the off-field stuff probably depresses me more than the on-field stuff at the moment, if I'm honest. And that's, you know, there's no point, even if they're successful, there's no point in that in my eyes if they rip up the sort of soul and heart of the support for future generations. So, yeah, time will tell. But, you know, I'm pessimistic with the Ineos approach.
Well, but Brailsford, as we've had in the mag, you know, people say he's a walking TED talk. So he comes out with these things that you can get away with in, you know, English rugby, whatever, but you can't get away with that. United, I will say, that's it. You know, the Cantona, is it big enough for me? The Dennis Law, who says it grows into the side. You know, you've got to have a certain amount of balls to be successful at this club. And unfortunately, we've got a squad, you know, probably, you know, it's easier said than done, but they're just not up to it, that pressure. And they go off like an Anthony, and suddenly you're out of the goldfish bowl and you can do what your level is. It's just not this level. You know, like, and it can just eat, and the home bit, that's why our form at home so poor, is, you know, the pressure that we put on. I will say a couple of things. Thanks to John B, who's helped with the pod. And then there's a good lad who said, mention, you know, we're all going through it. I've had a few things, dips and that. Andy's Man Club, I'm going to look into that more. But, you know, like, just dig in, everyone. Spring's nearly here. Hopefully better times on and off the pitch for us personally. And, you know, like, if it helps, don't take United too serious. It's that age-old quote. It's the most important, least important thing in our health. You know, health matters, mental health matters. And if it's getting too much, you know, don't be arguing late night at Twitter. If it gets too much, just switch off. You can now, hopefully, get out and get some fresh air and think, let's all collectively give our heads a wobble, because we don't want to all suffer because of this club, even though we do suffer. Why we do this, there's a new mag on Wednesday. Please keep print going. Please support it. Why do I? I had a wobble with the mag 5 weeks ago, you know, just, but the Dennis stories, that keeps me going. And then I think, you can't let the bastards win. And in our own way, you know, we stood outside 5-6 games, educating people. Why have you got that on the cover about the 66 quid? So we, in our own way, we do our protest, and we've done it for 20 years now, every mag, that we can educate, and we're there as a visual protest and the club can see us. So support this mag. I'll go through it quickly. We've got 6 pages for your letters. We're getting more letters than ever, which is great. You won't always agree. It's a fanzine. It's meant to prod, poke and provoke. So, you know, like, if you don't agree, we've got a bloke who interviewed Fergie about his faith, and he's written about that, which is fascinating. View on Rashford and some background stuff. The Growler's really persuasive. Tim Powell's call to arms about United Way, which had me fist pumping when I read it. A lad's written about on the Old Trafford pitch whilst on the Poppers. Dunk has put a data analysis on this 66 farce and how United, what they should be doing with data. The bullshit of modern football. Rodney's put on 20 years of the Glazers. A red goes to Buenos Aires. Nick will love this. And he spent a weekend in Buenos Aires on football, wine and steak. And he got in 3 games. And that's a good read. All the regulars. Julian with another great URA report. Dan on his outlook for United right now. now. Red has really well written about Fulham away and just how one Nick's away day yesterday, how one single away day can make a difference. Well-sourced gossip as we look behind the inner workings at the club, and of course Pete Shaw spitting feathers. So please support it. Right, I've got, before we go and hate in the week, because I've interrupted your Sunday, I will go. I've got 2 points of order on the pod while I was away. The first is the Euro away white, the cravats, the white suits, testing oranges like the man from Del Monte says yes. Much as I appreciate your highbrow, it's, I'm going to pronounce it wrong here, it's Midgetland, isn't it? It is not Midgetland. The amount of people who were shouting Midgetland in a space of about a minute was like, I was going, oh, I know our pronunciations, I'm worst of all. The other thing is Nathan missed such an open goal he could get in our strike force on Wednesday. When the man says you can't sit on the dock of the bay, there'd be no song. Otis Redding would never have sung it. You can't sit on the dock of the bay. You got the open goal there. So I laughed to myself. Nick, what's your hate?
Just the final point on the Ineos thing as well. I saw a really funny tweet that made me laugh this morning. And it said, if Jim wants to cut the cost, well, what he should do is just pay the players for the 20 minutes they show up each week. So I thought that was cool. Two hates of the week, both from yesterday. I really, really, really hate high squad numbers. There was only three players yesterday on the pitch for Everton that had squad numbers between 1 and 11. I don't know why, but that really bothers me. We had six, just to give you an idea. That's how bored I was in the first half. I was looking at things like that. I was counting those kind of things. Anyway, another hate of the week was yesterday was, as you leave Goodison, there's a row of buses that are supposed to take you straight back to Lime Street. So I came out, I thought, got in this queue to get on a bus. I just assumed they were all going to Liverpool. So as I got on this bus, obviously full of Everton, there was no United fans near me whatsoever. The bus said Liverpool City Centre on it. So you'd naturally think, oh, just get on here. £2, brilliant. Into the centre, that's not bad, is it? I suppose it's only 10 minutes. Anyway, the bus stop, anyway, dropped me off at some random housing estate in the middle of fucking council estate Liverpool. And I was just like, hey, mate. I don't think this is Lime Street. Like, where do I go from here? And he's like, oh, no, it doesn't go to Lime Street. It goes to Sandhills. Which is the equivalent of Bessie's of the Bar, the Metrolink equivalent for you. So I was just like, I have no idea what I'm doing here. So I ended up getting onto the platform, and I thought, because they had, like, a little Mersey Rail thing there, so I thought, I'll just try and see if I can just jib on or something here. I couldn't find a way to pay. And they've got, like, those tap-in, tap-out machines. So I was, like, trying to tap it with my credit card, and this guy comes over and he goes, yeah, mate, that doesn't work unless you've got a Mersey Rail card. He's like, why have you not got a Mersey Rail card? I was like, I don't have a Mersey Rail card. And I thought, and straight away, he knew I wasn't never. And I was just like, and he just looked at me with disgust and won't talk. And I thought, well, that's a very good. So I thought, I'm just going to try and jump in the train. So I thought, I walked straight up, and there was 3 minutes till it came. And I said to this guy, and I was like, hey, mate, I said, where do I buy a ticket from? And he goes, oh, you can't buy a ticket, you have to get it from the Mersey Rail app and your card details. I was like, train comes in 3 minutes, I can't do that. He was like, I was like, are they gonna check tickets? He was like, oh, they're gonna check tickets, like you've got no chance. So I was like, fucking hell. So I'm like trying to download the Mersey Rail app yesterday and the train came and I thought, I'm just gonna get on it, plain dumb. It's like, I'm not born among shit, you can tell I don't have a Scouse accent, I think I'll be alright. Anyway, I got on the train and the ticket inspector literally walked on straight away. And I'm like, hey mate, where do I buy a ticket from? He's like, have you got the Mersey Rail app? And I'm like, no mate, I'm not from here. And he was like, all right, where are you from? I went, Manchester. He went, ah, no, you can't come on. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you need a ticket. But where can I buy a ticket from? He's like, oh, you have to go to the kiosk around the corner. I was like, where's that? He went, I can't tell you, our train's got to go. So I'm trying to shut the door. And there's three scout bastards I spoke to yesterday. Could have just literally have gone, yeah, there's a kiosk up there. If you just turn left, you can go in there and buy a ticket. You don't need to download anything. So how hard would that have been? Horrible bastards.
Thank God we didn't lose, and B, that you didn't get done in, and we're now, there's just a screen empty today with no Nick. We don't know where he is.
And I'm sat there looking at the phone and I've got a big United crest on the wallpaper and I thought, probably should change that looking now. And all of them were just going on about the penalty and I thought, oh my God, this is fun.
Shame. Can you match that?
I don't want to reopen that saga, but yeah, it begs the question that you're with other Reds that you know, why didn't you just go with them into town or
shut the bus? literally getting out, it was just like all the Welsh went one way and then I just got caught behind and then turned around and they were all gone.
I've only got one hate.
Yeah.
And I'll have a quick love, I think, as well.
Good.
Not
we need that.
For the week. But yeah, it was just prompted me.
Yeah, Shane having a quick love. Let's clarify that.
It would be fucking quick, I tell you. But the sort of, being at the game and, it does, we covered the Bucharest one, but that was a great trip, with great friends, etc.
You got San Sebastian.
And San Sebastian came up as well, which links to my hate, which I'll come on to. But the love is that, I was at Spurs away last weekend and went, my lad went ahead and he went to the pub where everyone's meeting around Liverpool Street, lots of Reds there. And what I found was quite nice, even though he sort of talked about the football being more important, I got to the pub and I was talking to a few people at one side of the pub and I looked over, there was people, Reds coming in. And the lad we know sort of saw Connor and come over and gave him a big hug, and I thought, well, that's nice that, you've had sort of, Connor's in his 20s, he's been going since he was six, and sometimes I think, will he drop out? And I thought, that kind of warmed me up, really, that community is still there. It gives me a bit of hope every now and then that we're going to pass that down. But the same thing that Nick was talking about, that sort of away day and the camaraderie and the social side still sort of keeps me going, at least. My hate of the week is like, it's bad enough scrambling to book flights and stuff on your aways. And just because I'm kind of fearing that each bomb might be the last one, I actually think we'll beat Real Sociedad. I think we will go through, but you're not sure. But I decided to extend the weekend, and my wife going to fly out, to make a weekend of it. San Sebastian, Bilbao, lovely spot. We've been there before, she hasn't, etc. But I was trying to book, and I know it happened to old Paul as well, trying to book return flights with Vueling, is that the right pronunciation? And you're trying to sort of book, and I thought, we just need one bag between us, we don't need two cabin bags. I'm going for like five or six nights now, so I need a cabin bag, but we share it. But when you book together, they won't let you. You either both got to have cabin bags or both go without. And if you go without and add it on later, it costs you like a ridiculous amount, £100 plus. So then I tried to book it separately. I thought, well, I'll just do two bookings, but you don't want to kind of miss out and one gets booked on and one not. So I was doing one on my phone and one on the laptop. And the bloody, they're so miserly with money. They've got some sort of software detection that they said, we think you are a bot. We could detect two transactions going from the same IP address. And I was like, for fuck's sake, people earn their living just trying to catch us out, trying to scrounge the offers. What in this world? Eventually you've got to sort it, but that's my hate of the week. Just stop trying to milk us for every penny. I'm buying two flights off you. I'm paying for one cabin bag. There's no need to sort of kick me in the balls for
mine. I don't have. Mine is, plastic bottles now have got the lid permanently attached, so you can't take the lid off. And the amount of times I've thought I've done it up in a bag and the whole fucking thing is just leaked over a bag. Just like, trust me. Look, I'm not an imbecile. I can put it in a bin too. Just trust me with the world. Right, the other thing is, Bruno...
I just want to say there, I think if you've kind of undone yourself there, because I'd semi-sympathy, but if you can't throw a fucking bottle top up, you shouldn't be trusted.
It's much harder with these ones. Anyway, Bruno, 170 goals and assists. I think... this podcast needs to give him a bit more love. Right, couple of things. Hate of the week is myself. It's pride thing, but Albert the other week taught me how to work out a perimeter. He's 9 years of age that I didn't know at 54 what a perimeter was. And I said, oh, no, this is the answer. He went, no, it isn't, Dad. And he showed me the way to do it. And I now know how to work out a perimeter, which I never knew. The other day we went during half term, we went to the zoo and I dropped a globe I bought Albert, and this 20-30-year-old woman rushed over and went, I'll pick it up for you. I went, I'm all right. He's like, what did she think I was, this decrepit old man who needed help? Nick had a fun football fact in Rod News podcast 256. So in your face, Nick, I've got one for you. Neil Lennon and Jason Orange are business partners. Go and work that one out. Neil Lennon and Jason Orange from Take That are business partners. Right, I've kept you long enough. I'm gonna go back to you, but quickly. Look, Nick said yesterday, he showed a video of a barmy pub that was full at 4 o'clock on a Saturday as if it was midnight, people singing and that. That's why we do it. Why we do the fanzine is the community, the readers keep us going. Campaign won't run as long this year, but it will start in April. Please, please get us to 40 years in 2 years if you can. But I look at the Dennis stories, I chest thump and I think, whatever the shit show, I still love having United in my life, despite all the things they do to us. Every time you think you're out, they pull you back in. But we all, during this shit show, need to find salvation where we can, because it's going to get worse. So with that note, whatever it does, you know, like if you need to get the force shield, just imagine do a zoom, White Lotus has started, good. Create a force field. Right, any other final comments, lads? Shane's just staring at me, giving me one of those stares. Go on, say whatever abuse you are going to think.
I'm just now hoping that that's not the noise that Amarin's hearing in fucking Brady.
It probably is a funana. He might open his eyes one day.
Nick, he could do with a
four shield or something. What a shame the reserve goalkeeper Binder. I know he was shaky at Spurs, but he did all right in the next game. You know, the shame is your reserve keeper when this one needs dropping is injured. Nick, you got anything else or are we done?
Well, I just think we probably do need as much as we need number nine, the very next position, we need to change his keeper. Just on that note, yeah, you're absolutely
right. Without a pot to piss in, so like, you know. I'd be interested on Wednesday if we are going bargain hunting, you know, like me and Steve have often said, Bowen, you know, these players who've done it in the Premier League or done all right in this football environment, be interesting to see what Delap's like, because if he goes down, you know, whatever the trigger will be lower. So is he someone, if we got a deal in a market that we don't particularly like, let's just fucking take our medicine and start getting this right. Right, cheers, lads. Buy the mag on Wednesday. Thanks for everyone who listens. Take care of yourselves, all right? Thank you.